Hi, Sigal.
Hi.
I'm Sarah Posner, and this is The Posner Show, and my guest today is Sigal Samuel. She is an assistant editor at Open Zion, which is a site hosted on The Daily Beast and edited by Peter Beinart, with a great, indispensable discussion about Israel, Palestine, Judaism, and it's become an essential part of my regular reading. And she also has the website Sigal Samuel, where I understand you talk about some of your fiction writing, which is
That's
really
right.
interesting too. So today we're going to talk about Women of the Wall and the confrontation that they have been going through with the ultra-Orthodox establishment in Israel. And events culminated last Friday when they were basically these women praying at the Western Wall. Were attacked by ultra-Orthodox men who were throwing things at them and shouting at them. And it was possibly one of the big boiling overs in this long-standing dispute between this women's group, which is fighting for the right to pray at the Western Wall while wearing tallit and being able to read from the Torah and wearing tefillin. And they've been butting heads with the ultra-Orthodox establishment. And this was possibly one of the biggest blow-ups in recent memory, but seemed to come out, in terms of PR, I think, looking pretty good for the Women of the Wall. But before we delve into what happened on Friday, let's pull back a little bit to explain what this is for people who might not be familiar with what's going on there. And so Women of the Wall, I understand, has been around for something like over 20 years.
That's right.
Pressing this case. So maybe you can give a little background on what Women of the Wall has been doing for 24 years and why last week things really, really came to a head.
Great. Well, basically, Women of the Wall is a liberal pluralistic prayer group. It's pretty simple. It's a bunch of women who, on the first day of every Hebrew month, want to pray at the Western Wall at the Kotel, wearing tallit, tefillin, which are, you know, traditional, you know, prayer garments traditionally worn by men. So that tends to upset the ultra-Orthodox. And ideally, they would want to be able to read from the Torah and sing out loud, you know, without having to worry about that be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, there have been over the years a lot of different sort of attempts at compromise. There was the attempt to have them pray over at Robinson's Arch, which is kind of an adjacent to, you know, the kind of Kotel proper.
Well, let's sort of explain the geography of what you're talking about here. So the wall is the, you know, remaining wall of the ancient temple, and, you know, at the base of the Temple Mount. So there are other interests at stake here too, because this is obviously one of the most contested pieces of real estate in the world. But we're talking specifically about the Jewish portion, you know, of where the Western Wall is, and there are two separate areas for prayer. There's a men's area and there's a women's area. And Women of the Wall have been praying in the women's area. It's not that they've infiltrated the men's area. But it's the actual praying and the wearing of the sacred garments and the reading from the Torah that the ultra-Orthodox have contested with Women of the Wall. And then recently there has been a proposal, which unclear at this point, I think, where it's going, but to create an egalitarian prayer space, which is what you're talking about, the Robinson's Arch area, right?
Exactly.
And when you say egalitarian prayer, do you mean that men and women can pray together there?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
That's right. And I mean, the thing about that proposal is that it's not so entirely new exactly, because Women of the Wall in the past, you know, were able to pray in that section known as Robinson's Arch, which is kind of just, you know, just kind of around the bend from what we think of as the Kotel proper.
Right.
But the idea of Natan Sharansky, who is kind of deputized by the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to come up with this plan, is to kind of really revamp and elevate that that area so that it would be kind of on a level with the Kotel proper, and kind of clean it up, make it accessible around the clock, make it so that no one is charged entrance fees to come and pray there.
Right, because currently you can pray there, but it's only at specific times, and you have to pay an entrance fee. Whereas
that's right. And there's also
praying at the Kotel, there's no fee at all. You can just go and you can go anytime.
Right, and so, you know, there's like an archaeological dig that's also part of that site, so there are all these kind of other concerns surrounding that as well.
So we're at this point where the Sharansky plan has been proposed, but of course, it's unclear whether some of the particulars have been cleared with the authorities over the Temple Mount, because this would implicate Muslim interests in the Temple Mount too, right? So that's been, it's been a little bit unclear exactly what's happening with the Sharansky proposal at this moment. But while that's been going on Friday, Women of the Wall went to the Western Wall to pray, and women were wearing tallit and tefillin. And did they agree? Was there an agreement not to carry a Torah with them?
There was an agreement not to read from the Torah, as they initially were expecting to be able to do. There were reports that this was kind of an agreement made with Naftali Bennett, another Israeli politician, to, you know, as a sort of a goodwill gesture, to kind of not do too much too fast.
Okay. So in the past, the Jerusalem police have arrested women with Women of the Wall praying at the wall, and it was probably maybe what, 6-7 months ago, that I think it really caught the attention of American Jews when they arrested Anat Hoffman, who's one of the founders of the group, and really abused her in the jail cell, and she was subjected to all kinds of physical abuse. And I think that this really was a moment that galvanized interest around this. And since then, the tensions around it have been building even more than they had been over the last 20 some odd years that Women of the Wall has been in existence. Would you agree with that? Is that sort of fair?
I think that's definitely right. I think that really caught the attention of everyone, especially American Jews, and that helped to kind of make very obvious the need to come to some kind of a solution, because this was clearly a problem. Women, you know, you had headlines saying women are getting arrested at Judaism's holiest site for praying, for singing out loud, for wanting to read the Torah.
Right. So let's talk about what happened on Friday. Why was this? Was this Friday, did the detentions around this past Friday, where ultra-Orthodox female yeshiva students were encouraged by their rabbi to go and do what exactly, I'm not sure. But there definitely seemed to be more escalation around this particular Friday. Well, it was Rosh Chodesh, but so it was the first day of the month on the Jewish calendar. So why do you think that there was this escalation of tensions on the Haredi side of things, where they were encouraging these young women to go, I think, to show female solidarity with the Haredi side of things?
I think, among other things, I think, first of all, the reason why this, you know, this past Friday was sort of different from all the others, was because this was the first prayer service following the kind of landmark Jerusalem District Court ruling, which stated for the first time that actually Women of the Wall's activities are not to be considered, you know, in violation of the custom at the local site, right? So there have always been these charges leveled against Women of the Wall that what they're doing constitutes a provocation, they're being willfully provocative, and that's, you know, it's their fault, that's on them.
Provocative of ultra-Orthodox who believe that women should not do those things.
Exactly. And, you know, because the ultra-Orthodox for a long time have had, you know, have had control over this site.
Right.
It's seen as being in violation of that and in that sense, actually illegal.
Let's break this down a little bit. So there's the court, which can issue a court ruling and saying basically, you know, the women can do this. They're not in violation of local custom. But local custom has been to arrest them, right? And so does the court actually have legal authority to tell the enforcers of the local custom, you can't arrest them anymore, and you not only can you not arrest them, but you can't harass them, and you have to enforce or prevent other people from harassing them when they're at the wall.
Yeah, amazingly, it does. It does have that power. This court ruling has the power to make sure that the Israeli police actually protect these women and do whatever they need to do to make sure that anyone, men or women, who are trying to harass or harm or prevent these women from praying as they wish, that they are the ones who get stopped and arrested. And that's what was so kind of shocking and amazing about what happened on Friday. You know, there was this New York Times headline that said 3 ultra-Orthodox men are arrested at the Western Wall. Whereas for months it was the opposite. It was the women who had been getting arrested or detained.
So what were the 3 men arrested for doing?
So, you know, there were all kinds of reports about, you know, what exactly they were doing. There was definitely some attempts at violence. There were some chairs thrown, some water bottles, some incongruously enough candy, I guess hard candy. And there was even rock throwing, which can be really dangerous, as we know from kind of other contexts in Israel.
Right.
So, you know, basically there were some kind of attempts at violence, and the police, you know, happily stepped in and wanted to make sure that didn't go forward.
So you wrote at Open Zion that this was a, did you use the word watershed?
Yes.
A watershed moment, not just because of what happened at the wall on Friday, but some other things that are going on in Israel with regard to gender equity. Can you explain a little bit more about why you argued that?
Sure. So I think that, you know, Friday's events with regard to Women of the Wall were incredible. But I think, you know, we should also be looking at them in the wider context, even just the wider context of that week, last week, which I think was an amazing week for Israeli feminism. There have been a lot of other things that have been happening, and one of them is this new bill by Tzipi Livni, Israel's justice minister, which is backed by the Attorney General, Yehuda Weinstein, and which basically seeks to criminalize, to make it illegal, to discriminate against women, to have gender segregation in, you know, everything from
buses,
you know, cemeteries to radio stations to, you know, preventing women's voices from being heard in army ceremonies and buses, those kind of famously gender segregated buses that we've been hearing about in Israel in the past couple of years. So there's now this bill, this attempt that's backed, you know, to reverse that tide, which I think is really, really encouraging.
How much do you think that, do you think that for American Jews, the events of the last, you know, since Anat Hoffman was arrested, when was that, in October or so, last summer or fall? Mm-hmm. And that really kind of made Women of the Wall a hit, you know, the mainstream press in the U.S., not just the Jewish press in the U.S. Do you think that was an eye-opener? I know that, you know, in my family, it was an eye-opener for a lot of members of my family. They couldn't believe it. It just was like, what? Like, that happened? You know, they arrested her and, you know, threw her in a jail cell and, you know, left her without her clothes on the floor. I mean, they couldn't believe it. And do you think that this was a wake-up call for American Jews about the impact of ultra-Orthodox control over, you know, what it means to be a Jew, like that they can define what it means to be a Jew.
Absolutely. I think it was extremely eye-opening, and it was kind of on everyone's lips, you know. Just this past November, I was at the General Assembly in Baltimore, which is kind of a very major kind of Jewish organizational gathering that's extremely widely attended. And so many of the speeches were about that. And Anat Hoffman herself was there and kind of got a standing ovation from this crowd of thousands. And it was it's something that basically that everyone's been talking about and has been very eye-opening, I think, for American Jews. And in a way, I mean, definitely, I think the Women of the Wall didn't ask for this in their ideal world. None of this, you know, kind of none of these arrests and things would have been happening. But I think it did help push their cause forward and really bring it to the limelight, especially for American Jewry.
Mm-hmm. Because I think that American Jews who, you know, who aren't Orthodox, so, you know, Reform and conservative Jews, I think that they're, you know, if you send your kids to Hebrew school and all of that, you know, they get this idealized vision of what Israel is, where, you know, I think that for, you know, my own son that, you know, who just had his bar mitzvah last year, I had the concept that Israel, that there is so much control in Israel by ultra-Orthodox. And this is true, obviously, not just in the context of inter-Jewish relationships or interactions, but also obviously, with regard to the occupation. But I think that the idea that, you know, so these kids, you know, who go to Reform synagogues and, you know, see women wearing tali all the time and so on and so forth, like this would be such a cognitive dissonance for them to realize that this is the reality in Israel with regard to how the ultra-Orthodox view them.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's absolutely right. I think a lot of kind of the discourse that we're hearing in Israel now is to sort of say, yes, but that's American Jews. And in fact, you know, most of Women of the Wall's supporters are actually American Jews, because to American Jews, it's totally incongruous and inconceivable that this kind of situation would be happening. So there's this attempt to say, in fact, Israeli Jews do not widely support Women of the Wall. This is a charge that Women of the Wall, you know, have been facing for a long time, and I think they actually finally just decided to really take matters into their own hands and poll the Israeli population. And I think just actually, you know, a matter of hours ago, if you follow Women of the Wall on Twitter, there was, you know, this tweet that went out that said, you know, there's this poll that's been done, and in fact, half of Israeli Jews support Women of the Wall, think their cause is just.
How many?
Half.
Half of American Jews.
No, of Israeli Jews.
Of Israeli Jews. I mean, do you think a lot of Israeli Jews, I mean, how, you know, how, I, it's, I mean, I, you know, I read Haaretz online, but I mean, do you think that this has been like a big attention grabber for Israelis? Or is this sort of a narrow slice of Israelis that have even followed this?
I mean, I don't know. I think it's fairly major. I don't think, you know, it's as major as the Israeli general elections or anything.
Right.
I think it's got a certain cachet, you know, it's got a certain, especially since Women of the Wall in the past couple of months have been adopting this narrative, this rhetoric of civil disobedience. You know, we're going to go pray in this manner at the Kotel kind of regardless, because we believe it's just. And, you know, this sort of spate of arrests or, you know, getting detained that's been happening, I think has thrown it into the limelight. And I mean, I think you'll find like a huge range of opinions on that in Israeli society. There are a lot of people who are dead set against Women of the Wall, including a lot of religious women who, you know, who want to be able to pray in the women's section without without having women of the wall beside them doing their thing.
Right. But, you know, I guess the question is, I mean, obviously, like, right now, the custom is that the customs are controlled by an ultra-Orthodox rabbi. Is that right?
That's right. So there's Rabbi Shmuel Rabinowitz, who helms the Western Wall Heritage Foundation, which definitely, you know, it's an ultra-Orthodox approach to what it means to pray properly, proper conduct at the Kotel, and, you know, the rules around what, you know, what counts as modest enough at the Kotel have actually been becoming, you know, increasingly stringent over the years.
So what could you used to wear that you can't wear now?
I mean, I think I actually read one of our Open Zion contributors wrote about, you know, just, I think it was, wrote about a six-year-old girl, going to pray, you know, in the women's section at the Kotel, and, you know, I don't know, I think she was wearing like a t-shirt and a skirt or something, and one of the, you know, kind of little old ladies at the Kotel who, you know, kind of the modesty police, went up to her and tried to put like a shmata, like a piece of fabric, over her shoulders, you know, these sort of strips of fabric, which are there at the Kotel for exactly this purpose.
That actually has been going on for a long time, because I was there when I was probably seven. Same thing. I mean, I was wearing shorts and a t-shirt, and I was a little seven-year-old girl, and I had this blue thing that I had to put around myself. You know, I think that at that time, and this was many years ago, this was more than 40 years ago, I understood that as, you know, as a young child, I just understood that as, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of just the proper deference that you would give at that place. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that has crossed over into something else entirely. I mean, you know, so it's like, okay, so if you have this rule that you can't have this much skin exposed, even if you're a child and it's 40,000 degrees outside, you know, but it's definitely crossed over into, you know, you can't wear a tallit, and you know, so like that's like the modesty thing is, I think, maybe even a little bit different than the enforcement of the rules that, you know, women can't do the same things that men can.
Right. Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think there have been reports that the sort of modesty rules have been getting more and more stringent over the years, but I think that's right. I mean, one can kind of separate out the notion of how it's, you know, proper or customary to dress at a certain site, versus, you know, the question of like, can women pray the way they want to, at, you know, what is considered Judaism's holiest site.
So what did you make, speaking of, you know, women praying the way they want to, what did you make of Hoffman's comment to the New York Times? You made note of it in your piece that you did for Open Zion about how the question of whether the rabbis bringing the female yeshiva students there on Friday was actually kind of ended up being kind of subversive for Women of the Wall, that these young women from the ultra-Orthodox yeshiva came and saw this and might have been thinking to themselves, now that looks interesting and like perhaps something that I would like to do, which would be obviously incredibly rebellious for them to do.
Right.
What was your sense of that? I mean, do you think that was wishful thinking on Hoffman's part? Or do you think that there might have been a little bit of a prompting these young women to contemplate the prayer separation in a different way?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think we're going to see droves of these ultra-Orthodox or Orthodox seminary girls kind of you know, turning around to Women of the Wall's way of thinking. But, and, you know, that New York Times piece sort of it itself said that this was Hoffman trying to put a positive spin on Friday's events. You know, I think it would be wishful thinking to think that, like, we're going to see just, you know, anything nearing a majority of these girls sort of have their eyes open to the cause of feminism and religious pluralism, you know, as it's incarnated in Women of the Wall. But I think we did see kind of a sort of shimmer of that in this, you know, what Hallel Silverman kind of tweeted that day. Hallel Silverman is the niece, the teenage niece of the American comedian Sarah Silverman. And Hallel is kind of...
Sarah Silverman's sister, her mother is a rabbi, right?
That's right. That's mm-hmm. right. So, you know, so she, Hallel and her mom have been kind of participating in Women of the Wall prayer services. And, you know, it's kind of become, well, I think Hallel has become kind of an activist for this cause. And she tweeted the other day that three of these seminary girls that were, you know, that were sent there to oppose Women of the Wall actually came up to her afterwards and said that for them to see what this group of women was doing at the wall was very meaningful for them. They seemed sort of touched
right.
or
right.
Seemed to kind of have their eyes opened in some way by that. So, I mean, that's a very, very small kind of thing, but I think that that's meaningful. And who knows? I mean, there's something kind of radical about there's a radical opportunity in a funny, ironic sense being presented to these Orthodox girls who are sent there to oppose a group. But some of them might actually, you know, see it for themselves and think, maybe this isn't so bad.
Well, I think that for women especially, but it's also true of men who are raised in fundamentalist religious environments, it's very frightening. The desire to break away if you've seen another way of living that offers equality to you or something closer to equality than what you have, or at least something more flexible in terms of the way you can live your life. It's both exhilarating and intimidating at the same time, because on the one hand, you would love to break free of the fundamentalism that you're living in. And on the other, you know, that same fundamentalism has taught you that other ways of living are not, for lack of a better word, kosher. I think that for women like that, it would be that sort of experience, exhilarating, terrifying, all at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's also worth probably mentioning that, I mean, I think that for the majority of girls raised in that world, they don't see it as oppressive. It's not part of their worldview to see it as such. I think I have just like 100 ultra Orthodox cousins in Israel. Sort of young women my age, or younger, who I think if I would ask them what they think about Women of the Wall, they would think it was horrible, right? They would think it was like the worst thing on the planet. And they would have no interest in joining, and they would definitely not think of their own gender roles in their ultra-Orthodox world as oppressive. They would think, you know, this is the way it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I do think that even so, I mean, I do think that every religious fundamentalist community obviously has its adherents who are going to think, yeah, this is just the way it's supposed to be, and would never consider breaking away from it. But at the same time, I do think that there's always some portion of them who do have the inclination to experience another kind of life. And whether these particular girls who talked to Hannah Silverman are those, we don't know. I mean, because we didn't talk to them, and they didn't really say much to her either. So, but it's sort of an interesting idea, even though we don't know for sure how the girls who were there on Friday were impacted by the whole thing.
So I think that, I think that's right.
What do you think is next? Okay, so here we had this moment on Friday when the women of the wall didn't get arrested. They were able to do what they wanted to do apart from reading from the Torah, which they agreed not to do. And three men were arrested basically for violent acts against them, throwing stones and so on. And so, you know, next month we're going to come around to the same thing. And simultaneously, there are discussions going on about the what's known as the Sharansky Plan, which has a lot of questions around it, obviously. Do you see American Jewish groups, I mean, particularly the Reform Movement and the Conservative Movement? I know that they had representatives meet with Sharansky. Is that right? What kind of role do you see them playing as this goes forward? And do you think that they're able or feel able to give the prospect of egalitarian prayer at the wall, or at least, you know, the ability of women to pray in the women's section as they please, their full-throated support?
I think interestingly, a lot of American Jewish leaders feel more comfortable kind of fighting for that cause in Israel than they feel, let's say, criticizing Israel politically. I think there is more freedom to kind of criticize gender stuff in Israel than there is to criticize, you know, stuff relating to the occupation. Mm-hmm. But I think one thing they're also kind of probably held back by a little bit is, I mean, there is always this rhetoric that you'll hear of, you know, you're American Jews, you live in the diaspora, you don't live in Israel, this isn't your battle, you don't have the right to tell us, the Israelis, you know, how we should be organizing our state. So I think that's one thing that they're a little bit held back by, but we have seen American Jewish leaders playing a really, really big role in this whole Women of the Wall issue. And, you know, arguably their willingness to fight for it is what kind of galvanized the Sharansky Plan to begin with.
Yeah. You know, but the reaction that you described by the Israelis, it's sort of, you know, that you should butt out of this and this is Israel's issue to resolve. But at the same time, I mean, Israel is in the sense of maintaining and administering the Western Wall. I mean, that's a holy site for Jews, regardless of whether they're Israeli or not. So the idea that, you know, this is not something for, I think that the idea that Jews from who aren't Israeli can't be critical of what's going on there, whether it has to do with gender equity or the occupation or anything, is kind of ridiculous. Do you think that going forward, I mean, are they in favor of the Sharansky Plan per se? I mean, it's sort of unclear to me because you've got these two simultaneous things going on, the women praying as they want in the women's section and then the egalitarian prayer space.
Right.
Which I think Women of the Wall has gone back and forth on whether they are even in favor of the egalitarian prayer space. Because didn't Anat Hoffman say last week or the week before that wasn't relevant anymore?
Yeah, she
now
did.
Had the court ruling that they could pray in the women's section.
Right. So she did, sort of to the chagrin of a lot of Women of the Wall's egalitarian supporters, mm-hmm. say at first that the Sharansky Plan was now, you know, quote, completely not relevant for us. And then, you know, there was a lot of Women of the Wall supporters I know who like to pray in an egalitarian way were really disappointed by that because they felt that they had been supporting Women of the Wall for years and, you know, they were kind of sidelined all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to her credit, I think Anat Hoffman very soon afterward realized that she needed to publicly reaffirm her ongoing commitment to the Sharansky plan, to say that, you know, even if this isn't now what Women of the Wall needs, you know, it's still something that we want to see happen for the kind of broader cause of religious pluralism in Israel and egalitarian prayer at the Kotel.
Right.
So I thought, you know, that was encouraging.
Right. But I think that, you know, there's sort of multiple things going on. You know, it's like a chess game, because obviously the Sharansky plan has all kinds of issues that need to get resolved. You know, so it's by no means a certainty that this would even happen and that there would be a space for egalitarian prayer, which could only be there. I guess that's the only conceivable place it could be, given that there's still an insistence but to have men and women separated in the main section. So, I mean, do you think that Hoffman kind of thought, well, you know, we got that court ruling and now we can go and, you know, do pray as we see fit in the women's section. So I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to get so worried about the other thing, which seems like not certain outcome in any event.
Right. I mean, I think that's exactly right. It is kind of like a chess game. And the problem here is that, I mean, I think there's been a lot of slippage between, you know, confusion of Women of the Wall's goals and the goals of a lot of egalitarian Jews, many of whom are members of Women of the Wall or who are supporters of Women of the Wall.
Right.
Women of the Wall as a group, you know, they want to be able to pray, you know, the way they do in the women's section. That's their goal. And, you know, I think as recently as last December, we had Annette Hoffman telling the press that she would refuse to be, you know, to pray over, you know, in some other adjacent area because separate is not equal. So there was this longstanding desire on the part of Women of the Wall to pray in the women's section.
So the main plaza, which is where we're talking about, is there is the women's section and the men's section, and the women's section is smaller. You know, that some people consider the Robinson's Arch area not to be really the holy part. So like the, you know, so while you might support having the Robinson's Arch section set aside for egalitarian prayer, because that's the only place that you're going to be able to go with your husband or your son or your father or your uncle and pray side by side with them. At the same time, it's not really equal in the sense that from the standpoint of what part of this geography is actually sacred, it's not considered that part. So it's sort of like, well, you egalitarian people who want to pray, you know, mixed gender, you're going to be over here on the side. So it's sort of a complicated set of goals, because if Women of the Wall's goal was to be able to pray in the women's section without harassment by the police or anybody else, then it looks like they're really on their way to achieving that goal. But the egalitarian prayer seems to have a lot of other issues, including the Temple Mount issues and all of that attached to it.
Absolutely. And I think part of why some Women of the Wall supporters felt stung by Anna Hoffman's initial statement was, you know, Anna Hoffman made the point very, you know, rightly that Women of the Wall includes a lot of Orthodox women. A lot of their members are Orthodox, and they would not feel comfortable praying in a, you know, praying without a gender segregated environment. And so, you know, they want to just pray in the women's section. And so Annette Hoffman said, you know, we have to be sensitive to those women, the Orthodox women in our ranks. But I think the discomfort came when, you know, the non-Orthodox and egalitarian members sort of started saying, well, what about us, you know?
Right.
Our kind of preferences also need to be taken into account.
So it sort of exposed some internal rifts, really, within the Women of the Wall, if not the organization itself, also within the movement, because the proposal for the egalitarian prayer was sort of happening. The Sharansky plan was being put forward right around the same time that the court decision came down. So all these different ways of potentially resolving the issue kind of collided. And it seems like just as things started to move in a positive direction, there were these other issues to resolve with
And I mean, I think in an ideal world, there would be both the option to, you know, for women, these women to pray in the women's section, and there would be an egalitarian prayer space at the Kotel, and that, you know, that would be great. Whether that Sharansky plan for an egalitarian prayer space is now going to happen, given that it seems Women of the Wall are quite satisfied with, you know, praying in the women's section, kind of remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah, and obviously, I mean, just for people who aren't familiar with this situation, obviously it will never happen, no matter what anybody does, that there will be egalitarian prayer at the wall itself.
Unfortunately.
I mean, I wish there was, but that seems like a pipe dream.
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely for the foreseeable future, that doesn't seem possible.
Right. Well, listen, thanks so much for doing this.
My pleasure.
And I look forward to reading what you write about this as it moves forward.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks.